Welcome, everyone. I'm giving the first talk, I guess, today. Thanks for showing up early. And I'm David. I'll be talking about effective infrastructure monitoring for Linux with Grafana, I guess, because I'm from Grafana. And we also use a lot of Prometheus and Loki and Node Exporter. So those things will feature heavily in this talk. And so before we get started, let's do a quick sort of catch up on what monitoring looks like at Grafana itself, because we also run a couple of servers in a couple of clusters. I think right now we have about 8 clusters running 270 nodes, I think was yesterday, and for all our hosted metrics and hosted logs SaaS offerings. And we mostly run those on 16 core, 64 gig machines, so quite big things, which is quite exciting. And but I'm also curious on if there's sort of overlap with the technology that you folks are using. So maybe just do a quick show of hands. Who here is using Grafana? So yeah, that's quite a bit. And Prometheus for metrics. Also, yeah, with fewer. And anyone starting to use Loki already? Yeah, okay, yeah, early adopters. Excellent. And Jaeger, cool, yeah, similarly, which will be quite a big thing for us next year, getting a bit better integration for tracing. And monitoring Mixins, has anyone heard of this and is using this already? No? Oh, okay, yeah, Chris? Oh, you heard of them, okay. Okay, that's good, because a lot of content from this talk comes from these mixins, but I'll talk about those later. So just another kind of philosophy that we also use at Grafana, that we try not to, like, we make dashboarding software, but we don't want to look at dashboards all day, so we try to just have monitoring by alerting, so using the time series that we produce also to write alerts for, and then only alert us when things are happening, so that most of our infra team can, after work, go off and make shakshuka or whatever, and only have to worry that if something happens, they get an alert on their phone or through other means, and only then they have to act. So that's sort of the philosophy around this, and some of the alerting rules that I'll show later, they also come from this monitoring mix-in. And so talking about monitoring for Linux, for us there isn't really a way around Prometheus and with the help of the Node Exporter. So I'm gonna do a quick tour around this. And initially I was looking at the Node Exporter website, or the GitHub repo and the README, and it just basically, I'm getting Slack alerts. I should disable this. There's a bunch of collectors in there that offer you hardware and OS specific metrics, and because this whole thing is written like a pluggable system, and for me this was all a bit kind of a confusing cloud, so to say, of modules and collectors. So I thought, since I'm here in Berlin and Ben from GitLab is also based here in Berlin, and he happens to be the maintainer from of the Node Exporter. So I just met up for him at the Korean restaurant and just talk about through how we can kind of make a better mental model of what all these different metrics in a Node Exporter do. And he liked to talk, since we were at a Korean restaurant, he just liked to talk about kimchi the whole time and how he made 500 people's worth of kimchi one time. But he had a really good idea, and he remembered this graphic. Who has seen this graphic before? Yeah, I guess we're at a Linux user space conference. That works. And so this is a really good map from Brent Gregg about Linux performance observability tools. And Ben has also been using a bunch of these quite in his day-to-day job. But the bigger task for him is always, how can we also have similar information out of or that these tools also provide, how can we have those in a sort of time series? And luckily, there's a bit of overlap with what the node exporter gives you. And for us, then it became a challenge. Okay, how can we map the node exporter metrics to what's sort of available or on what we need to cover in the parts of a Linux system? So we clean up this graphic and then try to map the first couple of metrics. So if you look at the metrics that a node exporter exports, they always start with node and then underscore, and then these modules are usually the next term in the metric name. And so we try to do this sort of mapping. And part of this talk now is to go a bit around these different metrics. So the first kind of classic example is CPU utilization. What does CPU utilization even mean? People are used to just looking at TOP, for example, but what does that give you? It's a bit unclear. With a time series and the node CPU seconds total, it's a bit more clear what it does, because it gives you the second spent in wall clock CPU and a wall clock time second on the CPU in the various modes that the CPU supports. So you have system, user, idle, guest, and steal, and all these different modes. And so here we're making use of this metric to draw the utilization graph, where 100% would be nothing running in idle mode, and 100% of the CPU being used by processes in non-idle mode. Yeah. So similar metric that often comes up for CPU saturation is the load average, which we have just been using traditionally because it's just been around for a long time and people have a vague idea on what it means. It's not really ideal because it's not just a CPU bound kind of metric, because it also tracks now a lot of uninterrupted task code paths, which aren't necessarily a reflection of how resource bound your CPU is. So, and for this metric, which is also not ideal either. We had to always normalize it by the number of CPU cores to have kind of a 0 to 100% saturation scale, basically. So instead of load average, what I've heard a couple of times now is to use the pressure stalling indicator, which is, I guess, a new way of monitoring how much pressure is or how much demand there is on the system from a CPU point of view. And the difference there is that we're no longer tracking just the number of threads that are waiting for the processor, but we're actually tracking the waiting time. So we'll get a better sense of how contested their resource is. And as you notice also, we don't really have to divide this anymore by the number of CPUs, because now we're just tracking the overall time that they're waiting. So another, let's just quickly go through memory metrics. We use, for the utilization here, we use the fraction of the available to the to all the available memory, and subtract this from one. And that gives us the used space. And similarly for saturation, we've decided to use pages swap per second. If anyone has a better metric to kind of talk about memory saturation, I'm also curious on feedback there. And for disk utilization, we're tracking I/O time. So this is how often or how long the disk operations are taking, or how much time was spent in I/O. And another interesting thing there is that we have a lot of metrics that actually map to things that are given to you by IOSTAT. So there's another sort of the space of the overlap there is quite big, actually. And there's an excellent article by Brian Brazel getting into which of the different fields that IOSTAT gives you can be represented by metrics. And so one more thing about disks. I think this is also something that features in every Prometheus training, which is the fear, I guess, of disks getting full. And we have some good alerts to, or you can use the Prometheus queries to write some good alerts on how fast, or they will alert you when you're sort of on a trajectory that your disk will become full. And in this example, we're using that the disk, or that the available disk space should be, or this should fire when it's less than 40% available, and if the available space is going to be zero, if the trend on how it's filling up over looked at over the last 6 hours, if that's going to be zero in the next 24 hours. And I think this is a quite powerful way to express these sorts of constraints. But this condition has to be true for 1 hour. So there's all, as you notice already, there's a bit of a drawback there. If the disk now fills up for some higher trajectory in less than an hour, you will have a problem, right? So you need to combine this with other alerts or other alert rules that track more aggressive disk filling speeds, I guess. And then you would tag them with a different severity and then route them to maybe your pager and not just create a warning alert. So actually a bunch of these are defined in the Node Mixin, which is a JSON-based library of alerts and recording rules and dashboards. And the Node Mixin for the has a lot of rules for disk going full. So not just not just the disk space running out, but also running out of inodes. That can also happen. So I really recommend taking a look at that mixin. And even if you don't use JSONnet in your organization, I think it's still good to look at the alerting rules. You can just copy them out. And if you think they can be improved, you can also add you can open a GitHub issue on that same repo, and then other people can benefit from your suggestions. Okay, just to round this up, these are some network metric queries that we're also running, and are always like these graphs where you can plot the transmitting rates on the negative y-axis, and then you get this sort of nice comparison on how your incoming traffic is shaped versus your outgoing traffic. Okay, so here's something that happened to us recently. This is another metric that's being exposed about contract entries that tracks how full the contract table is on your system, which is needed to, I guess, take care of your connections. And we recently had this. We're running our nodes on GKE, and some of the nodes just hit that limit and then couldn't establish any new connections. And so, but this is also something we didn't have an alert for. And this is where I just want to quickly show how you can use Grafana to write queries that will help you write an alert. So let me check on how this goes. So I'm using the Explorer view here, and I'm already zoomed into the time where this actually took place. So this was on the 12th, and between the 12th and the 13th, down here. Checking, yeah. And then, as you can see here, there was this big spike, and we're hitting one, right? So, and if you compare the fraction of entries to the limit, and it's one, then the table's full, obviously. So this happened here, and then what I then try to do is I use a split view to come over here and basically start with the same query, and then I start adding these comparisons. So I only want time series basically where the connection where the fraction is bigger than 50%, for example. Then I also use I also want to only alert if they're bigger than the average of all the fractions. And then another good practice is to use the standard deviation or double the standard deviation from that average, so that you get so that you can rule out a couple of false positives when, for example, everything is sort of at 70%, for example, then maybe that's fine. Maybe that's GKE supposed to run. But if some of those are deviate too much from those, these will then show up here, right? So if we change this here to, let's say, 3, and then run this again, okay. Then it. That's good. Good point. No, that didn't work. Oh, that worked. Can also zoom in a bit. Yeah, so now we have fewer. And then, so on this side now, I would be modifying this query, and then when I'm happy with it, I'm happy when I've identified the offending time series that are on the left, and if they survive on this side, I know I have an alert rule that would have caught this thing, right? And then this is what I would copy out into my alerting rule. Okay, let's go back to the talk. So, yep. And is that working? Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, and I've lost this window. Quick here, I just have to find my notes. So there we are. There are the notes. Oh God. This should be easier. And can I just go left? Yes. Perfect. All right, so a couple of collector gotchas. It's good to be aware how many time series they produce. And when you run a node exporter, it also runs, or you can also access it on port 9100 on your system, and then you see the huge list of things, or the huge list of time series. And sometimes, so it's a bit up to you then to figure out which collectors you want to enable to not have too many time series, and then also. some legacy collectors. They run scripts or execute programs, and then so this puts additional burden on your system. In terms of volume of time series, you could obviously write relabeling rules for to just drop a couple of these, but maybe that's a bit too tedious. So I have this pro tip from Richie, who builds data centers in his spare time, and he tends to run two node exporters on each machine, and one with a minimal set and one with a full set, so that the stuff that's regularly scraped is just contacting the one with the minimal set. And if they need to investigate a bit further or look at the just some things that you would otherwise have to log in the machine and look at the proc file system, you can then just go to the second node exporter that has the full set and look at the metrics that are exposed there. And I'm told that there's a lot of savings to be had there. Also, he's a big fan of entropy alerting, because when you run data centers, some hosts sometimes run out of entropy, which to me always sounds a bit like something from the future. A little bonus collector, Björn, who's also here, told me about this, the text file collector. And this basically adds little text snippets from files that are in a given directory to the exported metrics text that's being parsed by your Prometheus. So, and there's some nice examples for this. For example, if you have maintenance jobs like running backups or pushing out new updates of your system, you can track those with just writing this little line, like when the last run was, and then you could also envision an alert that basically checks this timestamp and compares it to the time that's now. And let's say if your backup hasn't run in like 3 days, you should probably alert. And then another nice one is if you run a lot of software directly on the metal, maybe in your whole fleet, you have some features enabled on some, and on other machines you have not. It's good to have a general overview over how many parts of your fleet have a certain feature enabled. So in a metric like this just helps you track this. Then another fun one is tracking how long your SSE disks are going to last. So speaking of rolling out and managing a whole fleet, I'm always a bit jealous when I look at the GitLab. The GitLab dashboards, I highly encourage you to look there too. They expose most of their infrastructure monitoring dashboarding on the internet. So you can go to dashboards.gitlab.com and just see how they're doing this. Here in this particular example, they are tracking the kernel version distribution on all their nodes. So here in their production system, they seem to have around 200 nodes, and the majority of nodes seems to be running a 4.10 kernel. Yeah. Which, if we paid attention, probably won't have the pressure indicator yet, right? So this is how you can kind of see what sort of capabilities your fleet has. And then they have a really cool one down there, which is the tracking which hosts are deviating from these majority versions. And then you can, which also gave me an idea, and I also heard this from Björn, that at SoundCloud they had these leaderboards about outdated systems. So you can write queries that basically group by team or by cluster on which team has the most which team is running the most outdated hardware. So these are the
me just click here. See if this works. Yeah, so this is our cluster now. So we do have around 246 nodes, for example, and I'm doing the top K query here. Let's see if we have a couple more. So there's some older ones. They're running, I guess, similar kernel versions. They're just not very normalized. I guess that's one of the problems with this. But here on the other side, I'm using a similar query where I'm using the top one, and then I'm counting again, grouping by cluster, so I can see which of these are not running this majority kernel version, basically. And so this is, and then so a similar query you could use in a dashboard to build this sort of leaderboard that that I showed you. Okay. So back to this one.
So I guess the bigger question is also, how should I organize all of this, all of the views in Grafana? And here's an example from GitLab again. They do a really nice thing where in their general fleet overview, which includes all the hosts for, in this case, the production system, they do this thing where on each row, they have, for example, the CPU utilization, and on the second row, they have the load average, but they have grouped this in columns by the application tier, right? So on the from the left, you have the web workers, then you have the API, and then you have the Git workers, and this is sort of in your head, how GitLab, I guess, is supposed to work. And here you can already see quite easily, I think, on how busy each of these systems is right now. And I think this is really helpful for capacity planning, for example. And then this is how we do this internally at Grafana. We use the mixin again, because that gives us the dashboards right away as code. And that has a cluster dashboard as an aggregation of every node in the cluster. And then also a template query driven node dashboard, which basically just runs this node exporter query and then returns us all the instances, which is our way of service discovery or like node discovery. Because every system that runs a node exporter should expose this thing. And that was it. We're also hiring. But I'm also really curious if there's any questions you have about the node mixin, the dashboards, or I'm also curious if there's any sort of funny alerting rules that you had to write in the past. So that's it. So I think your arm went up first. So the question was, what's the minimum version to be running to have the mixins? And the answer for this is probably it should already work with 5, I think, because the mixins is something that you run in your build pipeline to output JSON that you then feed into a Grafana instance. And I mean, I think if Torq was here, he would say, like, you can go back to version 2, right? But I don't know if I can make that promise. Yeah. But version 5 should be fine. Yeah. Yeah?
Stop.
Nope.
Thanks. Ed from Packet. I saw one metric that you'd pulled, which was SSD related drive health. Have you done any other bare metal monitoring of note, of like looking at the underlying hardware for the system that you're monitoring?
So we at Grafana, we don't, but I would imagine that that this is commonly done, and if there's any sort of little tool that can output something to a text file, then this would be one of the text file collector use cases where you have the cron job running and producing this occasionally, and the cron job would run as root and has access to all these things, and then the node exporter then exposes it, and Prometheus comes occasionally and reads that value.
So for anything
that's not directly included as a module for Node Exporter, you can probably easily replicate with the text file collector.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Thanks.
Oh, it's Casey. Casey.
Hello.
Was at the Korean dinner, Korean lunch as well.
Yes. Do you know of any best practices for ignoring network interfaces that are useless? So if you run containerized workloads, you wind up with a million Vs and bridges and things like that. So you don't care about, you can't run out of packets or drops on those.
Yeah. So we actually have recording rules that ignore we have recording rules that ignore the loopback interface, for example. So you would write a similar recording rule. So it would be ignoring useless something. Like that's literally a name that we chose for the recording rule. Yeah. So maybe not a really satisfying answer, but yeah. Yep.
Hi. Loud. You create those rules, the alerting rules, manually, right? So are there any tools that you could use, like say that, okay, we've had a problem at this time, and this time series show that something is going wrong, and then you would get an automatic alert that will alert later on when the same thing happens again?
Yeah. So. There's two parts to this. If you can answer this statically, like with like let's say a certain value should never be higher than 70 or something, you can use just Grafana-based alerting, where in the panel you can draw a threshold, and then that is run in the Grafana backend as a continuous alerting service. If it's more dynamic and sort of the threshold is kind of dependent also on the rest of the traffic, then Prometheus-based alert rule would be better. But there's currently no good interface on how to write these, and I think I've shown you the way I would approach this, just with this sort of split view where I can see this is all the results, and I only want to filter out the ones that would have alerted, right? And then since the Prometheus alerting rules are just like queries, where then you just have to also say for how long should this condition be true, then I think it's pretty easily copy and pasteable. Yeah.
Thanks.
So, there's one more. Cool.
Just one more. You mentioned one component, the PSI, needed a 4.20 kernel.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other kernel versions of Node? I know this is a user space Linux conference, so
yeah,
I don't want to
so
ask
this
kernel
is,
questions.
Yeah, that's actually what I'm also curious about, and maybe people here actually know the answer. And it's because that's also a feature that if you looked at earlier at our majority version, it's a feature that we can't use either since we're running on GKE, and it might take a good 2 years, yeah, before this will become available for anything that runs in the cloud, which is a bit sad. But cool. I don't see any more questions. I'm here the rest of the day. I might pop out real quick to the Brandenburg Gate for the climate strike. But I'll be there for the evening event as well. If you have any questions, cool. Alrighty, thank you.